We're holding at the top of Memtesa Aleph. We were discussing yesterday, the Mishnah and then the Gemara had been discussing the concept that that a woman can be considered a Nesua, at least to a certain extent, not even before the Chuppah, even after you have Mesiras Av L'Shluchei Abal, Mesiras Shluchei Av L'Shluchei Abal, that the father or his Shluchim have given away, have handed off the Kala to their husband or to his Shluchim. We said at that point, we discussed yesterday exactly what is accomplished by that. Does it mean that at this point the husband can yarshin her? Does it mean at this point that he can maybe with or without her father can cancel her nedarim, etc. So now the Gemara asks a more general question. Well, according to Rashi, this is kind of a more general question. According to Tosfos, it's actually more a continuation of the previous piece. But let's first go according to Rashi. We were saying then that once, the last thing we said yesterday is that if this Kala, after having been given over to the Shluchei Abal, if on the way then between then and the Nisuin she's Mizana, then she gets Chenek. So she's not considered an item HaRosa anymore, who would get Skila, she gets downgraded to Chenek. The Gemara is asking a more general question. The Ema, shouldn't we say, maybe we should say then, Hecha the Hadril of Einasha, suppose that afterwards, this Kala, before she goes to the Nisuin, before she actually goes to her Chasin, she goes and returns home. The father has given her to the Shluchei Abal. They're accompanying her to go to the town where her Chasin is. On the way, she changes her mind, let's say, and decides to head back home. Maybe we should say Hadrila Milsa Kamaisa. Maybe we should say that she returns to her original status. Just as we said that before she leaves the Rishos to the father, she's still in his Rishos for various purposes. We said as far as eating Truma that she can't yet. If her fiancé is a Kohen, we said as far as Afaras Nedarim that her father still has certain rights over that, etc. So how do we know, once she's given over to the Shluchei Abal, how do we know that that's irreversible? Why don't we say that it's reversible? That's how Rashi learns it. Tosfos explains that the Gemara's question is a little bit different.
We're talking about
a Naira. A Tana or a Naira. Bergeris, it wouldn't be relevant, yeah. Tosfos explains the question a little differently. We said yesterday we had a pasuk, Liznes Beis Avia, which teaches us that once she's out of Beis Avia, once she's out of her father's house, once she's with the Shluchei Abal, then already she's not considered a Naira Hamayros anymore. At this point, she's considered a Nesua, and therefore the punishment for Znus would be Chenek. So there the question is that maybe we should say that if she were to return home, she would go back to the original status, and therefore we need the pasuk Liznes Beis Avia to tell us that not. Now, according to Tosfos, that's the point of the Gemara's question. Anyway, Amar Rava, you don't need that. Hahu kva poska Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel. We already have what Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel says, which again, according to Rashi, that it's irreversible. Once she's given over to Shluchei Abal, then that's it. There's no going back to Bein Nasha and going back to the original status of Naira Hamayrasa. Or according to Tosfos, that we have Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel already telling us that it's not possible to, and therefore we wouldn't need the pasuk Liznes Beis Avia for that. So we have it available to teach us the general fact that if she goes to Shluchei Abal, that affects a change in status.
But in both cases, Rashi and Tosfos, possible to reverse.
So Rashi is just saying, right, that we shouldn't logically think it's possible to reverse because Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel tells us not. According to Tosfos, we don't need Liznes Beis Avia to tell us that you can't reverse because Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel teaches us that. To Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, the pasuk says in connection with Paras Nedarim and Parshas Matos, the neder first it starts talking about a girl when she's still living at home when she's a naira, or actually it can actually be a year before she's a naira. We'll learn in Nedarim over the summer. Bezos Hashem, that a girl or a boy from a year before Bar or Bas Mitzvah is already Nedarim Nivdakin. There's a possibility that their Nedarim are valid. If they know when they're making a Neder, they know that they're making a Neder to the Eivishter, then the Neder is Chal. So a girl from 11, a boy from 12, So during that last year before her Bas Mitzvah, and then during the 6 months after it, while she's a Naira, so the Pasuk says her father can cancel her Nedarim. Then the pasuk describes the case of a girl who's moireses, where there we say that we said before, and the Gemara talks about it a lot in the Nedarim, that you need the father and the oros together have to agree to cancel her Nedarim. One without the other can't do it. Then the pasuk says neder amono grusha, that the neder and then the pasuk has this pasuk, then there's this pasuk that we're going to quote now and explain, and then the pasuk continues if she's a married woman, then her husband can cancel her Nedarim. In between, the Torah says this pasuk, "V'neder almana u'grusha," that the neder of an almana or grusha, kol asher asra al nafsha, anything that she asked it on herself, yakum aleha, will stand for her. Meaning there's nobody, meaning that if she wants to get it canceled, she need to go to Beis Din and get atzaras nedarim. There's nobody who can be made for it. So the question is, matam adlaima, what's the chiddush? V'alim mutzis mikal av and mutzis mikal baal. Obviously, there's no father in the picture, there's no husband in the picture, so of course there's nobody to cancel her nedarim. What's the point of the pasuk mentioning it? Ella, no, what the pasuk is teaching us, Hareisha Masa Ab L'Shluchei Baal, suppose the father gave her to the Shluchei Baal, Oisha Masa Shluchei Ab L'Shluchei Baal, or again, we said it doesn't have to be the father himself, it can be his Shluchim, gave her to the Shluchei Baal to accompany her the rest of the way, and she became an Almona or a Grusha on the way. So when we say over here, V'neder Almona or Grusha, we're not talking about where she was married for many years and now all of a sudden she becomes an Almona or a Grusha. Of course not, the pasuk doesn't need to tell us that there's no Chiddush in that. But here, where she went into the husband's Rishus by being given to his shluchim, and then she became an almona or grusha. Hey, a chani kareba beis avia shozu or beis baila shozu. So you can't. Let's say for example she's on the way and her husband brings her a gift that her husband sent. Yeah, or they bring her news that her husband died. Yeah.
Does she need a gift?
For Meiris, of course she needs a gift.
Yeah.
She's same thing. No, she's a full-fledged almona or grusha, as the case may be.
And a yibum also shy by,
Everything. So we said before that there's certain things that may not be in effect yet. There's the question whether the husband yarshins her, at this point, and whether she can eat truma yet at that point, according to the Mishnah Rishonah, and et cetera. But for most purposes, yeah, they're already husband and wife from when the Eirusin was done, long before the Mishnah Shlofei Baal. No, so we said actually yesterday that our Mishnah had made a point of saying that ad she dekanes l'rishus habaal until she actually enters the rishus habaal, then she can't eat truma yet. Anyway, so suppose you have this case. She became an almona or grusha on the way before she ever met her chassan. So you can't say that she belongs to her father's house. You can't say that she belongs to her husband's house. What the pasuk is teaching you, kiven sheyotza shahachas mishus av, once she went out for even a short time from mishus av, shuveni yachal lahafer, then he can't be made for anymore. In other words, what we're saying is like this. Suppose that this woman had been an arusa. Suppose that before we ever dealt shluchei av, shluchei baal, while she's still living at home, her arus had divorced her or died. Then the din would be, we said as long as she's an arusa, we say you need her husband, her fiancé, her arus, and her father together have to agree to cancel her nedarim. What happens if at that point, before there's any mesir of the shluchim, the arus dies? Then it's called nisroikner rishus la'ab, that the rishus that up until now was shared between her father and her fiancé is now nisroikner. It's like emptied out. His is taken away and it's returned to the father. What we're saying is, though, that here, where she was on the way, where she's with shluchei abal already, at that point, there's no going back to the father's rishus. There's no nisroikner rishus la'ab. That's the point the pasuk is telling us with this v'neder almona or grusha. You shouldn't think that it's like the case where she's still in arusa living at home before any mesir of the shluchei abal, where then if her arus dies, the rishus to cancel her nedarim goes back to her father. No, at this point, since she was already with shluchei abal, even though and at that point she died, or at that point her husband died or divorced her, then there's no nisroikner rishus la'av, then at that point she's on her own as far as getting her nedarim canceled.
Even if the shluchim come into the father's house, they say?
The mashus, yeah. I mean, we said yesterday that it has to be that the father or the shluchim or the father's shluchim are out of the picture. We said yesterday, for example, that if the father is still accompanying the shluchim abal, then she's still considered to some extent in his rishus. It has to be that she's only with shluchim abal. Yeah. Even this before chuppah, That vart I mentioned, by the way, about Seitz Chamashalom yesterday, about the vart, why we shoo away the Malachim, comes from Shem Mishmuel, who said that vart. Yeah. Anyway.
What's Shachas, by the way?
Shachas doesn't literally mean an hour. It means even a short time. When we say an Asher Yotze, Yepshe Leiskai, Mafil Shachas, doesn't mean an hour on the clock. It means a period of time. Yeah.
And Shluchei of also?
Same thing.
Wait a minute. That one's
Shluchei of also. Right. Right. So therefore, so we already have that pasuk to say, we already have that pasuk and that drasha of Tanit Veda Bishmal to tell us that once she started going with Shluchei Abal, then there's no going back. So therefore, there's no possibility of thinking that there's a possibility of going back. Amar Papa Achanan Namitanena. Yeah, in fact, we can see that from a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Habal Naira Hamayrasa. The Mishnah says if somebody has relations with a Naira Hamayrasa, Eini Chayev. He's not chayef skila, agitate naira, b'sula, ma'irasa, b'hiba, b'esaviyah. She has to be a naira, a b'sula, she has to be ma'irasa, not yet married, and she has to be b'esaviyah. Now, bishlem a naira, we understand, as we said yesterday, naira means v'loi b'geres, if she's a b'geres, then it's downgraded to chenek. B'sula means v'loi b'ula, same thing. Ma'irasa means v'loi nesua, not that she's already married, then it would also be chenek. So the question is, b'esaviyah, la mu'urtemai. What is the extra thing b'esaviyah have to add? No, what would it add? Lavlama uti masa abla shluchei abal. It must include this case where she's already out of the father's reshus in the sense that he already gave her over to the shluchei abal, and he or his shluchim left and are now out of the picture. That's already considered. At that point, that already downgrades her to chenek, the punishment for znus to chenek. From which we see, therefore, that there's no going back. At that point, already she's not bevesavia anymore, and therefore it's no longer skila. And Amr of Nachum Yitzchak, Afanan Nami Tenene, yes, we have another Mishnah in Sanhedrin, also in Sanhedrin, that expresses the same idea. The Mishnah there in the 10th parak of Sanhedrin is describing the people who get chenek. So it says over there, Habal, one of them is Habal Eshes Ish, Kivin Shenichnesa L'Rishus Habal Nisuin, once she entered the Rishus of the husband for Nisuin, Afapishal Nivala, even if she didn't have relations with her husband yet, Habal La'ahareze B'chenek. So anybody who has relations with her will be Chayav Chenek. Which means nichnas alusha sabal ba'alma. So all we said is nichnas alusha sabal. There was no chupa or anything yet, but she entered the husband's rishus in the sense that she's already with his shluchim and not with the husband's shluchim anymore. And again, we see that it's enough to take it down from skila to chenek. Shmamina. So that proves it. That proves this point from Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel that there's no going back. We learned in the last couple of Mishnayos the idea that a husband has an obligation to support his wife, but a father doesn't necessarily have the same obligation to support his daughter. So that's what our Mishnah is going to talk about now. Our Mishnah and the Gemara is going to talk about all the pros and cons of that.
Boys,
we'll get through in the Gemara. Wait. The Mishnah says, "Ha'av eni chayev b'mizonis bita." A father is not chayev to sustain his daughter while he's alive. Zem medrash darash Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah lefnei chachamim b'kerem b'yavne. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah darshan the following, deduced this from the following darasha that he gave in front of the chachamim in the kerem b'yavne. Kerem b'yavne, I think we're all familiar with, is the name of a famous yeshiva in Israel nowadays, one of the religious Zionist yeshivas. But
I've
been there
5 years.
Oh, really? Okay. But, okay. In origin, though, it means the famous yeshiva in Yavne, where Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed Nasi, and in fact Rashi says that this is Russia, was one of the things that he darshaned on that day when they appointed him Nasi. Why was it called Kerem B'Yavne? Rashi says because they sat in there in rows in the Beis Medrash like a vineyard, like a Kerem, yeah. Anyway, so he darshaned as follows. There's two takanas that the Chachamim made as part of the Tznoi Ksuba, which are going to be, the details of them are going to be discussed later on Daf Nun Aleph and Beis. One is called Ksubas Benin Dichrin, which is a husband and wife get married. They write out a Ksuba. There's 100 or 200. There may be Tosfos Ksuba that we talked about the other day. There's also a Nadin. The deal with Ksubas Benin Dichrin is a Chacham made a takana that any boys who are born from this marriage between this couple are going to be entitled to Yarshin. That they're going to be the exclusive yorshim of that ksuba, of their mother's. If the mother dies, then we don't say that the ksuba just becomes part of the estate. If the mother dies before the father, we don't say the ksuba just becomes part of the estate, and when it comes time to divide it up, it just gets divided evenly between all the heirs. No, these boys who are born from that marriage are entitled to yarshin, specifically this amount that was in their mother's ksuba, and then the rest of the nechasim are split up evenly among all of the yarshin. Because, you know, obviously you can have, for example, this husband may have had more than one wife, either at the same time, before Cherem Dreb and Gershim, or one after the other. So he may have children from another wife. So what will happen is, you know, suppose that the whole amount for the ksuba, let's say with Tosis ksuba and Nadin, let's say, is altogether $10,000. So we say that 10,000 is earmarked for the boys from that marriage. They split it among themselves, and the remainder of the nechassim is split up among all the other yorshim. That's called ksubas benin dichrin. Number two, another takana that the chacham made is, what about the daughters? Is the other takana is that the daughters from that same marriage are entitled, we touched on this the other day, they're entitled to mezonos. They're entitled to be sustained also out of the, also specifically out of the estate until they get married. No, well, it's one of the deals of the ksuba is that we'll take the ksuba. Actually, what it is both of them relate to the ksuba. What it is we're saying we'll take the ksuba money, the ksuba plus tosis plus nadan. We will set aside out of it mizonis for the daughters. Whatever is left after we set aside mizonis for the daughters goes to the sons from that marriage, and the rest, all the other nechassim that are not the ksuba, will be divided among all the other heirs, all the other boys from his various other marriages.
Can the boys take the money from the ksuba invested and give the parents to the daughters, or they have to start to give a chelek to the daughters?
There has to be money set aside that the daughters are going to have their mezonos. However, it's done exactly. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah darshan as follows. We have these two takanas together. Habonim yirshu rabbit, habonis yizoinu. That the sons inherit the ksubas benin dichrin, and the daughters are entitled to their mezonos. Which we learn from that. Ma bonim einin yirshin alacha misasav. The sons only inherit after the father dies, because that's how ksubas benin dichrin works. Habonis einin mezonos alacha misasav. And so also that the daughters are entitled to mezonos only kicks in when the father dies. So while he's alive, he doesn't have a chiyuv to. So the Gemara says, let's consider, what is the Mishnah saying? The mezonos bitei hu de'eino chayev, that the implication is he's not chayev to sustain his daughters. Haba mezonos b'noi chayev, which would seem to imply, what about boys? Those he would be chayev to sustain. And furthermore, we can deduce from the Mishnah, bitei nami chayev hu de'lekva ha-mitzvah yikta. We can also deduce, the Mishnah is saying that the father is not chayev in the mezonos of his daughter, which implies, though, that there is a mitzvah involved. In the Gemara's hierarchy of things throughout Shas, we always have there's chayva, something that you have to do. There's mitzvah, which is sort of an optional mitzvah, and then there's reshus, which is basically whether you want to or not. Whether you have your choice in the matter. So if we're saying over here he's not chayev, which would seem to imply that it's mitzvah. Which, by the way, you know, we're not necessarily just talking about where otherwise these girls are going to, well, we'll talk about soon, whether, you know, are we talking about just the case where if he doesn't support them, are they going to have to go begging or whatever? Not necessarily. We could also be talking about a case, for example, where they have independent property of their own. Their mother died many years earlier, let's say, or you know, or something, or whatever, and they yarshin from her. Yeah. So they have a bank account of their own, let's say, yeah. So the question is, mani masnifin. So who is our Mishnah like? If we're saying those two implications from the Mishnah, that the Mishnah is implying that you have that it's a mitzvah but not a choiva to sustain the daughters, and it's a choiva to sustain the sons, because that seems to be what the Mishnah is implying. Then mani masnifin. Who is our Mishnah like? Lo rab Meir, lo rab Yehuda, lo rab Yechin ben Breka. It doesn't seem to be like any of the following tanoim. The Tanya that we learn in a Braisa, mitzvah lozer nesabonos. It's a mitzvah, meaning not a choiva, to sustain the daughters. And how much more so then that it's a mitzvah to, but not a chayva, to sustain the boys who learn Torah. Mitzvah means when we say mitzvah versus chayva, means we can't force him to do it. But still, if he does it, he's getting a mitzvah, as opposed to reshus. Just means, you know, it's a nice thing to do, but it's up to him basically. Yeah. How much more so for boys who are occupied with learning Torah, that he should be supporting them.
But it's a mitzvah.
Divrei Rav Meir. Rabbi Yehuda omer mitzvah lozer nesabonim v'kavachayim lebonis mishum tzurusa. Rabbi Yehuda says it's the other way around. The mitzvah is to sustain the boys. A kavachayimer, if you have a mitzvah to sustain the boys, achas kama v'kama, you should be supporting the girls, mishum zilusa, because of busha. Because otherwise, what are they going to have to do? They're going to have to go beg on the streets. It's more of a busha for a girl than a boy to do that. We'll learn later on in the Samachs when we're going to have a whole sugi over there, including a lot of interesting agata about tzedakah. I mean, Gemara points out over there that if you have a man and a woman come to ask for tzedakah, that you give in certain cases at least you give the woman first because more of a busha for her to go around begging. What's the difference? by the way, between Reb Meir's and Reb Yehuda's points. Both of them seem to be saying it's a mitzvah to sustain the boys and the girls. This is how they learn it. Rabbi Akiva Eger says the difference would be, what if you only have enough to support one but not the other? According to Reb Yehuda, the main thing is to support the boys because they learn Torah. Secondary to that, you should also support the girls if you have the money for it. But Reb Yehuda would say the other way around. Rabbi Yechon ben Bereka says that it's an obligation to sustain the daughters after the father dies, because that's part of the Tanoi Ksuba. But during the father's lifetime, neither the boys nor the girls have any claim for support, meaning not even as a mitzvah. So, mani masnissin. So, who is our mission alike? Ira Meir ha'amabon mitzvah. If you're going to say our Mishnah set is according to Reb Meir, we said the Mishnah seems to be implying that it's a chayva to sustain the boys, but according to Reb Yehuda, it's only a mitzvah, not a chayva. According to Reb Yehuda, also, he says that the girls are a mitzvah and also the boys are a mitzvah. Again, there's no chayva, whereas we seem to imply the Mishnah is saying that girls are a mitzvah and boys are a chayva. So far, it's not like either of them. According to Reb Yechon ben Bereka, there's not even a mitzvah for either boys or girls as long as the father is alive. So the answer is, no, you could actually understand our Mishnah according to any of these three mandamars. Because you could say that it's according to Reb Meir, because we would understand the Mishnah to be saying like this. The point the Gemara is going to be making is, we assumed that when the Mishnah says the daughter means, but not the sons, there's a different rule for the sons. What the Gemara is going to say now, what the Gemara is going to explain is not necessarily. The Mishnah may have mentioned the daughter because there's more of a chiddush in that. And therefore it mentioned that, but that the sons are included as well. So, Ibo Yisemer Reb Meir, V'hochikama, the Mishnah would mean like this. Ha'av ene chayev v'mezonis bito, he's not chayev in the mezonis of his daughter, v'hu adin l'bnoi, same goes for the son, there's not a chayva for either of them. Ha'mitzvah bito yitzah, but there is a mitzvah to sustain the daughter, kavachom l'bonim, and how much more so for the boys. Ha'haydeh katoni bito, so why would the Mishnah specifically mention the daughter? Ha'kamash malon, the chiddush would be, da'afilu bito, that even the daughter, where she's not learning Torah, and therefore you'd think there's nothing really to be gained by supporting her. No, chayva hu d'leka. Granted, there's no chayva. You can't force them to do it. A mitzvah ikka, but even her, even though she's not learning Torah, you're still getting a mitzvah by supporting her. So we can understand the Mishnah according to the Meir that way. Or we could say that the Mishnah is according to Reb Yehuda, v'hachikama, ha'av ene chayev b'mezonis bito, that a father is not chayev to sustain his daughter, v'chol shekein l'bnoi, and how much more so he's not obligated to sustain the son, because according to Reb Yehuda, the logic was the other way around. There's more of an embarrassment for the girls than the boys, therefore there's more of a reason to say that you should have to support the girls. But anyway, the Mishnah also would be saying the daughter and chol shekein the son, ha-mitzvah b'b'nayika, but the implication is no chayva, but there is a mitzvah to support the sons. V'kavachayma l'banayis, v'kavachayma to support the daughters, because it would be zilusa, it would be a busha for them. V'ha-dekotani bita, it's a wise mission mentioning bita. Same thing. Ha-kamash malon, da'afilu bita chayva leka. Same logic to what we said by Reb Meir. All the Mishnah wants to tell you is that you should know, even by the daughter, even though there's zilusa, there's not a chayva. You can't force him to support her. And that's why the Mishnah says Bitei. V'ibayisem Rabbi Yechon ben Bereka, or possibility number three, you could say that the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yechon ben Bereka, v'hachakama, ene chayev b'mezonis Bitei v'hu adin l'bnoi. He's not chayev to sustain the daughter, and the same thing goes for the son. Again, we're saying you mentioned the daughter, but it includes the son as well. V'hu adin na'afilu mitzvah nami leta. The truth is, according to Rabbi Yechon ben Bereka, it's not a chayva, it's not even a mitzvah. It's only a reshus. So why did he use the word chayva? Since the daughters are entitled to mezonis after the father dies, and that is a chayva, that's an absolute obligation on the estate because of the ksuba, because of the tanoi ksuba that we mentioned before. Tananami ene chayev. Therefore, the Mishnah for parallelism says that but while he's alive, there's no chayva. But what it would really mean, according to Rabbi Yechon ben Bereka, when he's alive, there's not chayva, there's not even a mitzvah. When he dies, it gets upgraded all the way from Rishus all the way up to Chayva for the daughters. For the Mizah, yeah. Now, Amr of Ila, Amr of Shlokish, Mishum of Yehuda Bar Chanina, all of this we're talking about according to the basic halacha. However, Usha Hiskinu, they made a takana in Usha. We learned in Rosh Hashanah. We learned in Rosh Hashanah that the Sanhedrin went in Golos 10 different times. They started out in Lishkas Hagazis, then they had to move to Chanuyos, then to Yerushalayim proper, then to Yavne, etc. Twice the Gemara mentions over there they were in Usha. Both times, obviously, we're talking after the Churban. When the years were, we don't know. We don't know exactly. Doris Rishonim, I think, claims that one of them was about that one of them was about 20 years after the Churban, and the other one about 60 years or 50 or 60 years after the Churban. But we don't really know for sure. Anyway, so they're saying in Usha they made a takana she heard him zonas bonaves benoisef shem kanim, that a person does have to sustain his boys and his sons and daughters when they're little, which Rashi says means ad shiav yusiris, until they get shtei siris, so until they're 12 or 13 respectively. Which Tosfos points out, then, the implication is, before this Takanas Usha, you were required, al pi halacha, to sustain them up until 6 years old. Well Tosfos mentions that later on, the Gemara talks about that in the Samach. Since up until 6 years old, the children usually are together with the mother, then therefore you have an absolute obligation, even before Takanas Usha, to support them. After six, then this is what we're saying, that you don't have a chiyuv, but you have a mitzvah, you don't have a mitzvah, but it's reshus, etc. But Takanas Usha makes it up until they're 12 or 13. It's an interesting thing, by the way, that Moshe Feinstein says about it, that nowadays, that this is in those times, where not necessarily, it's true, not after kids were 6 years old, not necessarily were they living with the mother, especially if the couple separated, or if the couple got divorced, for example. Very often they might well go live with, at least boys might well go live with the father. Nowadays, it's much more common that kids up until 12, 13, even beyond that, but whatever, live with the parents, live with the mother. So therefore, forget about Takanas Usha. Therefore, and the Gemara is going to discuss now to what extent Takanas Usha applies, whether the halacha is like that. But based on that logic, that is part of mezonos for the mother to also support the children, then it's automatically included.
Why did they make it?
It may be that it was hard economic times and there weren't enough people who were willing to support their children after age six, so they felt they had a need to make some. Yeah, I did actually see an interesting vote that somebody said on it, that they meant it also as like a coded message to the Eibishter. It's after Golus now. We're not smuch mal shulchan avinu anymore. We're not at the Eibishter's table. But we're still canon. You need to support us. Okay, so Iboyelahu. So now the question was Hilchas Akavasei. Rabbi Ila is saying in the name of Resh Lakish, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Bachanina, or Rabbi Yosi Bachanina, it says on the side that they made this takana in Usha. Is the halacha like him or not? Which, well, so that's what we're asking. When we say the question, what do we mean? Is the halacha like him or not? So Shita Mekubetzes quotes from a version of Rashi, which we don't have over here. That basically the question is: do we rely on what Rabbi Ila is saying, that they actually made this takana or not?
Because if we do rely,
then it means that's the halacha, that they made a takana, the Sanhedrin made a takana, so it's binding on everybody. If the halacha is not like it, if it's not a reliable source, then not necessarily. Tashma. Come, let's bring a proof. Ki hava osu l'kamei de Rabbi Yehuda. When people would come to Rabbi Yehuda with a case like that, he had a father who didn't want to support his kids past age six. Amalahu, so he would tell them, you know what this guy is like. Yorud Yelda, a Yorud has given birth. Abnei Masa Shadia, and then she's throwing her children onto the support of the community. What's a Yorud? So Rashi says it means a tanin, which there's a couple of different explanations among Rishonim, whether it's some kind of animal, a jackal or something like that, or whether it's some kind of bird. Whatever it is, the implication is that it's an animal that's very cruel to its young. No, a raven we're going to get to in a few lines, actually. That's something else. That's a Yorud. So a Yorud is either a jackal, or an animal from the dog family or something. Something like that, or some kind of vicious bird.
Snake.
Somebody who says that a Yorud is a snake would be, I don't know. The
tanin.
tanin we mean over here, not tanin as in a tanin as in vayivro elokim as a taninim agdolim, but rather as in, like it says in Megillas Eicha, gam tanim chol tushat, that even the tanim, even though they don't like their children, they still give them the breast and they nurse. Actually, the Oruch quote from the Medrash on Eicha, that this tanin or yorud, whatever it is, it's actually the Eibishter had to make it looks away from its children when it's nursing them, because otherwise it would want to eat them. That's how achzoriistic it is. So we're saying here, the Oruch brings it from the Medrash from Medrash Rabbah on Eicha. I haven't looked it up in Medrash Rabbah, but the Oruch brings it. Yeah. Anyway, so the point is, Rabbi Huda is saying, look how cruel this guy is. But he's not actually saying, well, let's force him to support them. So evidently, the halacha is not that there was a sakana of Osher. If there was a sakana, you'd force him to. Similarly, Kiyabu also l'chamei de Rav Chista, when the case came to Rav Chista, Amalahu, he told the people, kfulei asisa b'tzibura, turn over a mortar, in public. A mortar is a big thing that you use for crushing. It's a big container that you use for crushing wheat or whatever. But it also, when you turn it over, it's like nowadays, you put up a soapbox and somebody can get on it and make a speech and everybody will see him. So turn one over, betzibur, in the middle of the street. Veleikum, let the person stand up on there. Velema, and he should say, urva boy bonne, a raven favors its children, and it helps out its children. Whereas this person does not favor his children, does not help them. So who should say this? Rashi brings two possibilities. Either it means you make the guy himself get up and make that public announcement, like I myself am even worse than a raven. Or Rashi says the second explanation, it means you have the shliach tzibur, the based in points, a public speaker to get up and make an announcement. You should know that Pliny ben Pliny is worse than a raven. Sigmar says, what do you mean? For Urva boy bonnet? You're telling me that a raven treats its children nicely? We say every day in davening, the Eibishter hears the cry of the young ravens when they call out, and he gives them food. Why? Because pastors, their parents don't help them out. The answer is, Lekasha haba chivri haba uchmi. One's talking about black, one's talking about white. So what do we mean? So a couple of different explanations. Rashi says that baby ravens are born white. The parents, ravens, crows, are black birds. So when the babies are born, like the parents don't recognize them. Or actually, some Mefarshim bring, I think, from a medrash or something, that what it is that the raven suspects his mate of having had an affair. And we find all the way back in Noach Teva that the raven was one of the only creatures that didn't hold itself back. So he suspects his wife, or his mate, of having fooled around. So therefore, he doesn't want to sustain the children. Later on, when they turn colors, when they turn black, then they realize they're their children and they have Rachmanis on them. Tosfos says a different explanation. That's what Rashi says. Tosfos says differently, that we're talking about there's two kinds of birds in the raven family. There's actually a lot of different kinds of birds in the raven family. We had this recently in Gimel Parachim of Rambam, that when the pasuk says that kol ha'od of l'minoi, that every species of raven is also, it means that there's more than one species that goes under the general term raven. So there's one kind that are black and one kind that are white. So the black kind, because again, like Rashi says, because the babies are born white, they don't take care of them. Whereas the white ones, they do. Well, Tosfos doesn't specify. He just says there's a black one and a white one. So okay. one of them treats their children nicely, the other one doesn't. Whichever one is which.
I was struck. Even though it's just black ravens, big black ravens, Yerushalayim, they have white ravens.
Okay.
Okay. White raven, different.
Okay.
Not white, but it's
okay.
Light.
All right. The Gemara mentions in a couple of places that there's a kind of bird called a zarzir that likes to hang out with ravens, and therefore it's also assumed to be from the same species of them. Halach minetzalmina, you know, whoever hangs out with the tameim is probably tamei himself. What? Lo lechinam halach zarzir. It's all of, yeah, only because it's from the same mean, yeah. So maybe it's that. I don't know. Anyway, so there's another example. They do this kind of social pressure on the guy to make him get up and then make a speech like that about himself, or they have somebody make a speech, but they don't actually force him to, because evidently, because Takana Thor Shel Nachal. A third one, When a case like this came to Rava, Amalei, he would tell the person, do you really want that your children should have to be supported from tzedakah? Also a way of like talking the guy into doing the right thing. Umar says, all of this that we're talking about, that we don't actually force the guy to give the tzedakah, we just try to pressure him into it with one of these things, is only deloy omid. If he's not rich, omid literally means that we can estimate how much his net worth is, and we realize, you know what, he may taka not have enough to be able to support his children and still have enough for himself to live on. Aval omid, but if he's rich enough, kafinim layal kochi, then we'll force him even against his will. Why, Rashi says, because then it's tzedakah. You can force the guy just to give plain old tzedakah. Ki had the Rava kafila Rav Nosson Ba'ami, as we find the case that Rava one time forced Rav Nosson Ba'ami about tzedakah, the apikin had dalad meh zuzil tzedakah, and he got from him 400 zuz for tzedakah. So we see that, yes, you can force a person into giving tzedakah. So 1 second. What? Say what? Rav Nosson Ba'ami? Is one of them, right? I guess. But yeah. Okay. So Tosfos asked the question. Rava forced him. Yeah. This Rav Nosson Ba'ami was rich, and Rava felt that he's capable of giving a lot more tzedakah than he does. So he forced or pressured him or whatever into giving 400 zuz. So what kind of forcing or pressuring or whatever are we talking about? Wait. So 1 second. Maybe he gave, but Rava felt he's not giving enough. But the bigger question anyway is, Tosfos asked the question, we know there's a general rule, the Gemara mentions in a couple of places, that when the Torah says in Mitzvah Saseh, where along with the Mitzvah Saseh it says a reward, for example, it says, Kabbat Isavich V'asimecha L'man Yarichun Yamecha, so Beis Din doesn't force a person to do it. A person sort of has the option of saying, you know what, fine, I don't want to do the Mitzvah and I won't get the Schar. So how are we forcing somebody to give tzedakah over here? So Tosfos themselves gives a couple of possibilities. One is that it doesn't mean he forced him, as in he reached into his wallet and took it out. It means he used words on him, we're saying. He influenced him by words. And in fact, Marshall also says something that the Rav Nosson Ba'ami, I mean, when we're talking about forcing him, when we're talking about B'chlal, when we're talking about this kafinim lay that we force the person to support his children, not necessarily doesn't mean we take him to Beis Din and give him petch or whatever. Rava obviously wouldn't have done that to Rav Nosson Ba'ami. It means that the way Marashah explains it is, there's a level of things over here. You have the level where you embarrass the guy publicly, where you say, for example, he's worse than a raven, etc. You have then a bigger form of pressure is where you point out to the person, do you know, you realize you're being over on a mitzvah. That was what Rava did before. Do you want that your children should be supported out of tzedakah, implying you're being over on a mitzvah saseh of not giving tzedakah? So Marshall said that's the kind of kfiya that Rava did to Rav Nosson Ba'ami. He pointed out to him, you know what? It's you have to give the tzedakah. It's not just a matter of you have a choice, you don't have a choice. You have a mitzvah saseh to do. A couple of other answers Tosfos gives. One, but not necessarily that it means kfiya as in literally taking in corporal punishment or whatever. Yeah. Okay, he was in a mode. Okay, so maybe he didn't realize. I mean, you have there's also, for example, the story. There's a story also involving Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfin, where Rabbi Akiva was a gabbai tzedakah. He was also Rabbi Tarfin's talmid for a while. Actually, later on they were chaverim and whatever. But he felt that Rabbi Tarfin was not giving tzedakah to the extent that he should be, considering how rich he was. He didn't want to tell him outright. So he does a roundabout thing. He tells him, you know what? How about you want to give me some money to invest for you to buy a city, whatever? And then Rav Tarfin gives him a big sum of money. Rabbi Akiva goes and spends it all on tzedakah for Talmid Chachamim. Eventually, Rav Tarfin asks him, let me talk to see that city you invested in for me. Rabbi Akiva calls in a kid from the Beis Medrash and has him read the psukim that Pizar Nosson Lavrenim Tzedkaseh Medes La'ad. That there's your city that I bought you. There's your blue chip stocks. And Tarfin realized that, Taka did the right thing. You're right, I didn't realize I'm not giving as much as I should. And he gave him even more to give out for the future. Yeah, yeah, that's amazing, the same kind of thing.
So the investment.
Yeah. Tarfin just gives other answers also that, yes, if the people of the city have decided among themselves that X amount needs to be given to tzedakah per month and somebody doesn't live up to his responsibilities, then yes, they can actually force him to do it. A couple of other interesting answers. There's one interesting answer the Shagas Aryeh gives. This is that we're saying that you get a reward for giving tzedakah. When do you get? He says it's kind of a catch 22 over here. When do you get that reward for giving tzedakah? When you give it, the save upon him yafas. When you give it willingly. So if you're not giving it willingly, you don't get the schar. So if they have to force him into giving tzedakah, that means that he's not giving it willingly. He's not going to get the schar. So yes, therefore they have to force him, because otherwise it's not a mitzvah sefer that has matan schara with it. That is another interesting answer that I saw from a sefer called Perdas Yosef. He says that, you know what, when we say that a mitzvah that has matan schara betzida, that Beis Din doesn't force a person to do it, for example, kibud av v'aim, the person can say, okay, I don't want to do kibud av v'aim, so I won't get long life, big deal. Here, tzedakah, if he doesn't give tzedakah, it's going to be the responsibility of everybody else. And he's not giving his fair share, so therefore everybody else is going to have to give more. That you don't say, that he can get away with it. Anyway, so we... Yeah, right. Anyway, the maskana so far is we see this takanas osher is not in effect then. So after six, you can pressure the guy into supporting the children, but not necessarily can you actually force him to. It's still a mitzvah, but not a chayva. Not a chayva. Right. There are mafarshim who explain that actually. I mean, so we're saying b'ushe iskinu. What are we? You know, we're not saying Rav Ila didn't tell the truth. No, the vort is according to some mafarshim, they say that faket. The vort is before takanas usha, there was no chayv on a father to sustain the children at all, even below six. Takanas usha said you're responsible up to six. So in that sense, and halacha is like that. There's also an interesting idea that Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in Dibros Moshe. He wants to say that there is an exception to this rule. He says a person only has one son and one daughter. Then it's a matter of he has a mitzvah of Pru Avu. And Pru Avu includes that the children have to grow up to be able to marry and have children of their own. So therefore, he would have an absolute chiyuv to sustain them until they're old enough to continue to the next generation.
That's the halacha.
No, he brings this as a vote, but he says the fact is I haven't found anything like that in the poskim. But still an interesting idea. Another since we're mentioning one of the takanas that the Chachamim made in Usha, so the Gemara is going to go on with a couple of others, some today and some tomorrow. Amar of Il Amar Shlokish, v'Usha hiskinu. In Usha, they also made the following takana: Hakosev kol nechas of Levonev. If somebody writes away all his nechasim to his children, so he, while he's still alive and healthy, he writes out a document that hands over all of his estate to his children. Nevertheless, who ishta nizonim b'ham. Nevertheless, he and his wife can still continue to be supported from these nechassim.
If he writes it?
Yeah, even though he wrote out that as of today, he actually says, even if you wrote my achshav, as of today, all of this property belongs to you, my children, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Nevertheless, he and his wife are still entitled to take out of that property, out of that estate, enough for their maintenance, for their food and clothes and whatever. Which Rashi says...
That has to be also written?
No, it doesn't. That's the thing. Rashi says it's takanas chachamim. It's a special takana of the chachamim that they carved out that exemption. Rashi says that takanas chachamim, I mean, we're saying it's takanas usha. The Rashba learns a little differently. It's not really so much a takana as rather that the chachamim... The average person, when they write away all their nechassim to their children, they mean to reserve for themselves enough to keep for themselves, so they don't expect to go begging. Yeah, so the Rashi learns that's kind of implied. According to Rashi, the vote would be that the Chachamim actually had to make this tachana.
Implied, what is it?
So according to him, the vote is that the Chachamim had to like make it official. You should know that even if he didn't actually say it, it's still considered yet. What are you telling me that the Chachamim had to make a takana to this effect? We have like this. The next piece of Gemara, we need to know two hakdamas that are going to be discussed later on in the Masechta. One is that one is an idea we discussed a few days ago, that when a man dies, his almana is entitled to be supported by the estate until she as long as she lives, or until she remarries. So there's a shibud on that property. There's also a different idea that this shibud only applies to property that is still part of the estate. As opposed to, if you have, now for example, when it comes to paying out the ksuba, we said, we've said before, and we'll have later on in the Masechta much more extensively, that the shibud even applies to property that was sold and is now in the hands of other people. Nechasim mishubadim, they're called. So not just nechasim b'nei chorin, property which is actually in the hands of the husband or his estate right now, but even property that he sold any time from the marriage and onward is also the shibud. The shibud applies to it also. And if he doesn't have enough property of his own, then she can go grab that property away, seize it from the other people.
To case in the community,
that way.
Exactly like that. The husband passed away, and the wife was tried to take the house from the wife.
Okay. Okay, I don't know if that's exactly the same thing, but okay. Okay. Incidentally, by the way, Mitina de Gemara, this whole concept of Shibud only applies to Karka. In the times of the Goinim, they made a in the times of the early Goinim, they made a takana that applied to the Talpulin also. There came a point historically when most Jews didn't own land anymore, especially under when Muslims took over many parts of the world. They imposed very high taxes on people, on non-Muslims who own land. So a lot fewer Jews ended up owning land. So there came a point in the times of the Goinim when they had to make a takana that Metalpulin are included in this as well. Yeah, the Rambam refers to it in a bunch of places. Yeah. The Takana remains, yeah. Anyway, so, now, but this din, this shibud that we're talking about only applies to the actual ksuba. It doesn't apply to mezonos. It doesn't apply to the almanah's sustenance. So if the husband sold a sold property, the almanah is not entitled to go and take that property away from the third parties in order to sell it, in order to raise money for her maintenance. And one more thing, you know, is when you have when a wife brings property into a marriage, the husband is considered like a buyer to that property. The reason why, by the way, Rashi mentions one other detail that's important to know over here. When it comes to a regular case where the husband sold property to somebody else, and now many years later the almana is trying to take from that property for her substance, and we're saying we don't allow it, the reason we don't allow it, the Mishnah says in Gittin, is mepnei tikkun olam. Because otherwise nobody's going to want to buy. And mela ksuba, the Gemara points out over there, mela ksuba is a fixed amount. The ksuba is 100, 200, plus tosfos, whatever. You know that there's a fixed amount. Once she gets that, then that's it. She has no more claims. Mezonos, I mean, she could live to be 100 years old. There's no end to it. So therefore, nobody's going to want to buy property from this husband if they know that it may eventually be taken away for an indefinite thing of mezonos. So that's one reason the Gemara gives over there. So mepnei tikkun olam, you know. On the other hand, when a daughter inherits this property and her husband is now in control of it, it's nixta malug or nixta tzen bazel, the husband is in control of it, so he's saying he's considered like he bought the property, we don't say this rule of tikkun olam then, because there's no reason to. He's not going to avoid marrying her because of this possibility.
But that even goes against the...
Yes, yeah, so no. Therefore, she would be able to take away something of that property in order to sell, in order to raise money for herself.
And that wouldn't destroy people's willingness to buy property.
You got it for free.
No, because basically he got it for free. His wife brought the property into the marriage as nixin malug or nixin tzen bazel.
Free.
Yeah. We're going to talk about it soon. There's a difference. We're going to talk about it soon. Actually, there's a difference between selling and matana. Wait. Okay. So. So Reb Zera or Reb Shmuel Nachmani acts as follows. We say in a Braisa, G'dola mizu amru. The Chachamim said even in a greater case, this case that we're talking about over here, where you have a guy died, he left over a wife, a widow, and a daughter. So the daughter inherited the property because there were no sons, so she inherited like no tzlachad. Her husband now we're saying is considered a lekeach. And we're saying that the almana. That the almana is entitled to support out of the nechasim, because again, even though the son-in-law is considered like a lekeach, we don't do this tikkun olam takana because there's no particular reason to. He's not going to avoid marrying this woman, the daughter, because the stuff might be taken away for his almana, for his mother-in-law. He got it for free anyway. So in that case, So if you're saying that if you're saying the almana is entitled to support out of it, how much more so if it's him and his wife while they're alive? So Rashi says the point is, if you're saying that the almana is entitled to it after he dies, how much more so than when the old man and his wife are still alive? Of course, if they gave away their nechassim to their children, they intended to reserve some of it for themselves. What do we need tekanas orsha for that for? Again, according to the various other possibilities of what exactly the tekana was, then the question will be slightly different. If we're saying that a person knows that he wants his almana to be taken care of, well, then how much more so is it given, according to the Rashi's explanation, that he's going to want that himself and his wife are being taken care of? So what's the point of the tekana? And we know this, the Shalach Ravin B'Igote, because we know that Ravin sent a letter that said exactly this. Misha Mesvi Niach Amono Bas, somebody who died and left over an Amona and a daughter, Amonasin Nizonis Minachosev, and his daughter, his Amona, is entitled to be supported out of the estate. And Nisus Abbas, even if the daughter gets married, Amonasin Nizonis Minachosev, then the Amona gets supported from his Nachosev. Same idea. We said the fact that there's a husband in the picture doesn't change things. In fact, such a case actually happened with me, meaning I guess that he was a dayan. But Amru, and they said, that the Amona gets supported out of Minachasim. So again, the question is, how much more so him and his wife? What do we need Tekanas Osha for this for? The answer is, Mao de Tema, okay, but you might have thought, Hasam Hu de Lekka the Torah, you might have thought, yes, there is actually a difference if you have only an Amona versus a living husband and wife. The difference is, with the almana, there's nobody available to work for her. There's nobody available to sustain her anymore. She doesn't have a husband. Therefore, maybe in that case, the chachamim would have made the takana that she's entitled to be supported by her daughter and son-in-law. At Aval Halcha Nitrach L'Didei L'Didah, he's still alive. Maybe we should say that maybe we'll assume he gave away all the nechassim. Fine, he'll go get himself a new job. Yeah. Now he'll send out resumes now at 70 years old, yeah. Kamash Malan, therefore, that's the chidnish that we don't see. Now, again, Ibari Lahu, they had the question, Hilchas HaKavaseh or less Hilchas HaKavaseh? Again, Rabbi Ila is saying that Tekanas Osha is the halacha like him or not. Again, do we say that they were acting the sack in this, or maybe do we say that the Tekana applied to something else, and therefore not? The answer is Toshma. The Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yonasan Haivokaimi. One time Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yonasan were standing together. Asa who Gabra, and a certain person came, Gochin, he bent down, Vinashkil Rabbi Yonasan Akari, and he kissed Rabbi Yonasan's feet. Amar Rabbi Chanina Mai Hai, so Rabbi Chanina says to Rabbi Yonasan, what's all that about? Why is the guy so grateful to you that he's kissing your feet? Amalei, so Rabbi Yonasan told him, Kosev Nechasev Levonim, who this is a person who did what we just described, he signed away all his property to his children while he was still alive. Asisinu Liznei, and I forced the children to support him. So because I went, so Rashi explains the part is that we're saying that Rabbi Yonasan is saying, I went l'fnim mishuras adin. Really, up adin, they wouldn't have had to support him. But I went l'fnim mishuras adin and forced them to, as a matter of kibbutz. Therefore, this old man is very grateful to me. So what do we see? Iyam b'shleim alav dinah, if you say that they're not technically required to up adin shumachi asiyanu, then that's why we're saying that he forced them into it and that it was a special favor, and therefore the guy is grateful to him. Eliyam dinah, but if you're saying the actual dinah, they have to asiyanu boy, then why he doesn't have to force them? He may have to force them, but the point is, why is this guy so grateful that he's kissing his feet? Right. The dying Paskin, according to the din, Paskin according to what it says in Shulchan Aruch. There's no particular reason to be so extra grateful to him. Tosfos learns a little differently. That the vort is that what the Gemara is saying is, what does it mean? Vasisinu luznei. It means Rabbi Yonasan is saying, I convinced the children to support him, as opposed to if it was required al pidin, then he should have actually forced them.
Why don't we use the same Russian we used before?
Kofi. I'll say Asisinu is another way of saying to force. The point is that we see from this story that no, it's not an absolute requirement. So no, the halacha is not like that Takana Sosha. So it's a mitzvah but not a chayva, yeah.